20 years since Hugo. What do you remember most about the night of September 21st into the morning of September 22nd, 1989?
Oh, boy. Well, I remember, interestingly, I talked to my mom up in Tennessee, and she said to me, be careful of the hurricane coming your way. And I said, Mom, you're messing it up. It's the CH factor. It's Charleston, not Charlotte. And I went to bed about 11:30, and 1 o'clock, the emergency management guy called me and said, we got a hurricane. Almost immediately, I heard one of the big trees in my backyard fall. That was the beginning of it. But that night was very interesting. First of all, the drive up to the emergency management center, and then just a hustle and bustle for the next several hours.
So at that point, you maybe didn't have time to really be projecting too much ahead to think of what you and the city were really going to be up against.
Well, actually, by the time I got to the LEC, I was aware of the fact that streets were practically impassable. It was still dark, of course, when I went down. But I was reflecting, once I knew that we really had a problem, the streets were down, I was observing power lines down, and so I knew that we would have a power problem depending on the size of the damage. And at that time I didn't have the extent of the extent of the damage. As it turned out, more than 90% of the city was without electricity or telephone lines. But already I was thinking about the emergency management plan, and if it's really this bad all over the city, then we've got a lot of work to do in the next several hours.
The Voice of Hugo is a title, honorary title, I guess, that you'll carry for life, because you were appointed as a key media spokesperson, giving daily briefings in the aftermath for many days after Hugo, updating folks on how the street clearing was going and the debris removal and the power restoration and et cetera, et cetera. Mm-hmm. How did you come to be designated as that spokesperson?
Well, in hindsight, I'm not sure. Someone said, let's give it a name. Someone said, it's already named. It's Hugo. I don't know how we came to the conclusion that we ought to give Hugo a voice. And so we gave Hugo a voice. And it occurs to me now in hindsight, when you give it a voice, it's manageable for people in the community. The other reason, you know, I don't know how I was pushed out there. We were laughing the other day. I hadn't combed my hair. I don't know what I was wearing. Someone gave me a shirt, and I walked out in front of the media. We were aware of the fact that nobody probably, by that time, we knew that no one was going to watch it on television. But
because the power was out.
The power was out. But the voice of Hugo was kind of funny to me. What I was thinking was that somebody had to know, somebody had to grasp the total extent of what we had to do. And that was my job. My job was the public safety element of the city government's function. And so the team that I had, police, fire, transportation, and then the private agencies were there. But I was the person, along with Marie Shook from the county, we were the two people who had a grasp on everything that was happening. And that in fact, was my primary job, to make sure that all the pieces were working. Not the traditional management sense, because people knew what they were to do, but to coordinate so that we were not stepping over each other. And so I had a full grasp of everything, you know, down to the fact that somebody's selling ice for $10 a bag. All of that information came together around me, and so our media people decided, you're the guy. I think I had suggested that Garant go out and do the the media thing.
Bill and Garant, the Bill former Garant, public information officer.
Public information officer. And he said, he looked at me and said, no, you're the guy, so you go tell them. I thought as I was going out, okay, if this gets messed up, I'm the guy who's going to have mud in the face as well.
So that role fit, that spokesman to the community or, you know, the sort of the public voice of the recovery, that fit under your job title, it didn't hurt that you had and have this deep, reassuring voice and tone and manner when you're in front of the cameras, or in this case, more so the microphone. But I recall that there was also a strong sense of authority in your voice. I think that's part of what people picked up on at the time and remember to this day as well, that there was a sense of, listen, I'm telling you, number one, it's going to be okay. Number two, do this or don't do that.
Yeah. And that was something that I had learned from some early experiences with much smaller incidents. But I think that's the necessity of having a manager on the scene. We have in police and fire incident commanders. And when that person in ascending authority comes on the scene, that person is responsible for the total activity. And I was aware of that, keenly aware of that, and recognized, and I've always said to the troops, if you're the incident commander, you've got to be the man or the woman in authority, and people have to know that you are the one in authority. I've always believed that, and I've also seen how people will respond to that almost in any circumstance. I'm not sure it was contrived. It was kind of a natural tone and persona that had to be out there, and somehow in the back of my head, it just happened. Mm-hmm. But it was because I did know that that's important.
Talking with Don Steger, former Charlotte assistant city manager, about the aftermath of Hurricane Hugo 20 years ago. Much was said in the wake of Hugo about the sense of community that developed. While there were stresses, there were tensions, people were aggravated, frustrated by the lack of power and so on, there was also this incredible coming together, neighbors helping neighbors, hey, I've got power, you know, we've got hot water, yeah, if you need a shower or whatever. So that was certainly the huge silver lining. Do you think today, is there any lasting impact on this community from some of those good vibes that developed in terms of a sense of community after Hugo?
Well, just regarding that particular time, I really think that was one of, if not the finest hour for Charlotte. And you're exactly, you're just right on target. We saw the kind of compassion that people showed to people who had nothing. Whether or not that has continued to grow, or just whether it's still here, is difficult to determine. Keep in mind now that we almost doubled the population that we had when Hugo hit our city, and we've got people coming into town who don't know the history of this city, the city that I found very compassionate. Did our compassion leave us at that time? There's some things that have happened in the last couple of 3 years that makes me wonder, have we outgrown the compassionate caring that we knew before?
What about more of the physical characteristics of the city? We lost however many thousands or tens of thousands of trees. From my perspective, looking around today, you'd never know it.
No, you wouldn't. In fact, that was another thing that happened, and I don't know who started it. It may have been the city arborist, Don McSwain. I'm not sure who did it. But, you know, within a year or less, in less than a year, people were buying little saplings and planting trees. And I don't think anyone knows how many trees were planted, but these were people who loved our fauna, and they wanted it back. And so I'm like you. I drive along, and I can't see the evidence of what happened to our tree cover 20 years ago. I think people did plant it back. And so it's difficult to look at the city and say, and even realize what happened 20 years ago.
Is there any other image or recollection that stands out in your mind here 20 years after Hugo's visit to Charlotte?
I think the greatest image for me, and you know, in my years in government in Florida and here, were littered with visions of some kind of community disaster, people taking advantage of it for criminal activity. As I think it says something about this community that we cared enough about each other, other than some minor incidents of looting, very minor, some price gouging, very minor again. We stood out. Yeah, the police on the streets and the Humvees helped, but there's a civility in this community that as I talk with other people before and after this event, that other communities don't have the way Charlotte has, and I hope we never lose that.
And just for the record, today you are doing what?
Today I'm wearing those little, you know, pullover sweaters, and I don't have a pipe, I don't smoke, but I am standing forth in a classroom. I did my doctoral studies in behavioral health research, but a heavy dose of statistics. And so I teach business statistics and finance at Pfeiffer University's graduate school, a business school. And it's so relaxing.
And you have another, at least part-time, avocation.
Well, I'm not. You mix the two together. You know, it's interesting. I took on a responsibility in 84. I'm ordained in the United Methodist Church, and a church here, Rita Memorial Church, at that time in 84, they were forming. In 86, we had just completed our new building and church building. And so all while I was doing these things, I had a good staff at church. I was actually serving as their pastor, and this is the 25th year I've done that, and it's kind of fun, but it just, you know, it keeps you from getting to be an old man and I'm old, so I'm getting older chronologically, but by George, I'm trying to stay as busy as I possibly can.
Thank you very much for remembering with us.
All right. Thank you.